And it is today's Topical Currents, Thursday edition. Joseph Cooper along with Bonnie Berman. And it's Food and Dining Thursday, hooray. With us now is Cordon Bleu chef, author, syndicated columnist Linda Gassenheimer. She's famous for her weekly Dinner in Minutes columns. So what's on the menu today?
Well, thank you for that.
I thought I'd kind of do a little different open for you. It was getting kind of old.
I see. Nice to be with you, Joe and Bonnie.
Thank you.
Nice to be with you.
Thank you. You too, Linda.
Okay, hospitality is on the menu today. It's a major industry in South Florida. It's an ever-changing field. Florida International University that we have right here in Florida, South Florida, is the forefront of the new ideas and training for the industry. And here to fill us in on the new changes is Dean Mike Hampton. He's the Dean of the Chaplin School of Hospitality and Tourism Management at FIU. Welcome, Dean.
Good afternoon. It's such a pleasure to be here. Thanks.
It's great to have you with us. And we'd love to hear from you, our listeners. Do you have any questions for our guest about hospitality here in South Florida? Give us a call. That's 800-743-9576, 800-743-WLRN.
Or email is radio@WLRN.org.
And with us is our favorite wine guy, Fred Tasker. He's joining us by Skype, and you can read his wine column. It's on the front page of today's Miami Herald. Fred, what are we drinking today?
Hi, guys. Well, I think I would like to ask Dean Hampton some questions about FIU's research into wine. They're doing some very exciting stuff.
Well, okay. I think he might have some answers for you.
And we do.
And he does. Okay, Dean Mike Hampton. Hospitality, there's new horizons ahead. How is it transforming?
Well, there are so many things that we could talk about to answer that question, Linda. The world is changing in all kinds of ways, and it's particularly impacting what's going on in hospitality and tourism. In our discussion from an academic viewpoint, we're really starting to look more at the science, technology, engineering, and math components that go into hospitality, and who would have ever thought that that would be part of the discussion?
Science in hospitality. Okay.
And math.
So, math. Absolutely.
We need some explanations.
Well, that'll let me out right away.
Give us a little explanation about what you mean.
Yeah. When we look at the kinds of things that we eat or we drink or the kinds of experiences we have when we stay in a resort, all of it is by design. And so what we're teaching from a management standpoint is how do we engineer the kinds of things that guests are going to experience whenever they go out to dine or whenever they're going to have a beer at a local pub.
What does that mean? You're engineering my thinking?
Absolutely we are, because we want to
influence that.
No, you should be very proud of that, because what we do is we ensure that guest experiences are the best that they can be. So we're thinking critically about that these days. We don't want things to happen by chance.
Well, so let me ask you a few questions then.
Sure.
How is your new generation of students adapting to all of this science, math, technology?
Actually, they're embracing it with enthusiasm.
Maybe they're teaching you.
There we go. You know, we're learning a lot from the students as well as they from us. We just looked, and we have 37% of our undergraduate students that are international, and 65% of our students that are graduate students come from abroad. And what that tells us is that globalization isn't coming. It's already here. And so the students from around the world are eager to learn what are we doing here in the U.S. And we have this millennial generation that thinks about things completely different than anyone ever has before. So we're designing curriculum and learning experiences that adapt to that younger generation and preparing graduates to go to work for the global companies.
So, well, what I'm thinking when you're talking about science, you know, I think about molecular gastronomy or things like that. And I don't think that's what you mean here, because you're a hospitality management school and you're not a culinary school.
Right.
So what are you talking about when you're talking about science?
Well, we're talking about making sure that people understand how we yield the kinds of things that are going to fit into our supply chain management. If we're going to operate a restaurant, we have to know that we're going to be able to get the kinds of products that fit within our menu. Right. So when we're teaching the management side of that, how do they get, if we're talking farm to table, how do they get the right kinds of products in sufficient quantities to be able to produce the menus that they're expecting?
And so is that all computerized?
Oh, no, not necessarily.
We use
computers and technology to help us with that.
Uh-huh.
We're doing a lot of predictive analytics to look at what crop productions for the future might be so that they're thinking about these kinds of things.
So I mean, this is something that we as consumers, we never think of. I never think about that. I go to the restaurant, I order food. I don't think about the fact that perhaps we're not growing enough food that's going to supply that particular meat for the world.
Absolutely. And that's a big concern, not just for the restaurant industry, but anyone in food service or in beverages. We have to make sure that we're planning and being effective, because there's so many factors that impact production and then the ability to get what we need.
Wow, that's a big part. That's a big lot to learn. Okay, but you mentioned hospitality. It's a global community. And you have a school in China.
Yes, we do.
So why did you pick China for an FIU school?
Well, that was a very strategic move for us, because if you look at the growth of hospitality and tourism worldwide, the greatest concentration of developers is happening in Asia. And China certainly is the big gorilla in the room. And we felt that we wanted to be the leader that gets established there to help, and the Western companies that are developing operations over there, to have a stream of talent that can help them in operating.
So these are all Chinese students who are there?
Well, it's a combination, because it's an FIU campus. We have both students from our Miami program that go there on study abroad, and they'll spend a semester or maybe even a year.
What about the teachers? Are the classes taught in English or Chinese or both?
No, everything is in English. It's exactly the same as our program here in Miami, but we hire some Chinese faculty that all have the same qualifications as our faculty right here, and we have some of our American faculty that are over there teaching.
So this is to create or supply hospitality students for Asia?
Absolutely. In fact, as a good example, Jamie Oliver is opening a series of his new Jamie's Italian restaurants all across Asia. And he's partnered with FIU to be able to help him in supplying the management talent.
That is amazing, isn't it?
Really? How large is the school there? How many students?
We have 1,100 students at the Tianjin campus. It's a big operation for us. And we have, in comparison, we have 2,500 students here in North Miami.
Wow. And I think it's amazing that you have students from all over the world coming into here to FIU.
Well, when you do something well, people from around the world really want to know how to do it right. And we've established an excellent program that attracts that kind of attention. So we're very fortunate.
Speaking from the person who established the program.
Yes.
But it is good. I know I've had some FIU students helping me, uh-huh. And they've been just a pleasure to work with.
So
I have
for
to say that.
We're very proud of them.
Okay. So now you have an amazing dining room that's there, looking right on the bay.
Oh, you know, and I'm going to look at you with a stern look, because it's a restaurant management lab. A lot of people have said, oh, you have a new restaurant. Well, it's not open to the public for general consumption. It's teaching facility.
And so we're going to eat out of beakers?
Well, yeah, in Petri dishes. We make that a point. No, it's actually a fine dining facility that's simulated, so that students can go in and practice the management techniques, looking at how they can improve efficiencies, how they might incubate new ideas for restaurant concepts. They can look at the integration of technology and how they perform the management operations. So it's really a learning facility.
Wouldn't it help to open it as a fine dining facility and have the public being able to take advantage of that?
Absolutely. And what the students do in a course is that they will offer four different simulated dining experiences.
Wait, simulated? That means we don't get food?
You do get food, yes.
But
it's a practice exercise, because our students, as you pointed out earlier, are not culinarians. So they really don't know how to cook. They're not here to learn how to cook, but learn how to manage culinary operations. So they practice cooking under the guidance of our culinary faculty. So they do produce food items, but at the same time, the class splits up, and a group will work on the marketing, a group will work on the financial side, a group will work on the operations and logistics side, purchasing and receiving. So the students get exposure to all aspects. So they have to be servers. Although when they graduate, they won't be.
Mm-hmm. How about customer relations?
Oh, absolutely. We have greeters, and we have a general manager that takes charge of how do we make sure we interact correctly with the students.
So do you have a virtual unsatisfied customer?
We certainly, they aren't virtual. We have real guests that come in. They can buy the tickets. And
what Bonnie's asking is that the public can come.
Sure.
Is it open? Not all the time. So if we wanted to go there, how would we do that?
It's scheduled. On the hospitality website, you can go in and see what the dates are that are available for people to come in.
Oh, okay. And what's the website?
It's hospitality.fiu.edu.
Okay.
And I'm noticing here on the brochure that you've given me, it's $20.
Isn't that a bargain?
For dinner?
Yes. It's a three-course meal. And it is spectacular, I can tell you. Our culinary faculty ensure that the meal comes out right. No disasters.
Fred's not on yet, but I'm going to ask for him.
Okay.
Do you serve wine?
We do. In fact, our wine program and our beer program both produce product that we serve to our guests as well. We also produce carbonated beverages.
I've been to a couple of wine tastings there, and they're really fabulous.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Right. So not only that, Bonnie, the facility is right on the water. It's a beautiful spot.
Is it the one in North Miami, Biscayne
Yes.
Bay?
Yes.
So it's Biscayne Bay.
Yes. So you have views of Olita State Park, the harbor where we have all the sailboats, and then you look across to Bell Harbor. Spectacular views.
Not bad. Not bad for $20 and a three-course meal. So go on the website to see where it is. Well, we're going to go for a break now. I'm Linda Gassenheimer. We're talking with FIU Dean Mike Hampton about the changing hospitality world. We'll take a short break here, and we'll be back with more. And we're back. I'm Linda Gassenheimer. We've been talking with Dean Mike Hampton. He's the Dean of the Chaplin School of Hospitality and Tourism Management at FIU. And hospitality is an important economic force in South Florida. He's been telling us about the changes and how FIU is adapting to them. Lots and lots of information there. But right now, it's dinner in minutes time. And in case you haven't heard, there's a big food festival going on now in South Beach. It's the South Beach Wine and Food Festival. And there's a burger bash going on. So if you're thinking burgers, I thought, well, maybe we'll have a dinner in minutes burger. It's a quick burger, but it has an extra kick. And it's a Texas tuna burger with jalapeno mayonnaise. So you just chop some jalapenos, peppers, do it in the food processor, and mix them with a little mayonnaise. That's easy enough. And then remove the mayonnaise from the bowl. And without washing the food processor, add some fresh tuna, some scallions, a little onion, and chop them. Not too fine. You don't want it to be mush. Then you make it into patties. Cook it in the skillet for about 2 minutes. Turn it for about 2 minutes. You don't want to overcook that tuna. It'll be dry. Place it on the bottom half of a burger bun. Then add some tomato slices, some lettuce, and then I spread the jalapeno mayonnaise on the top of the bun and close it up and just eat it.
That sounds pretty good.
It's very good and very simple. The complete recipe and a photo. That's at dinnerinminutes.com. And please follow me on Twitter. That's at L. Gassenheimer. Fred Tasker, are we drinking today?
Yes, we are, as always.
Why would I ask you?
I understand that FIU is researching the effects of climate change on winemaking, which is becoming a very hot topic these days. And I've written in the past that the National Academy of Sciences says that by 2050, some of the world's top grape-growing areas, California, Spain, Bordeaux, Tuscany, maybe too hot and dry to grow good grapes. Is this what you're finding?
That's absolutely what we're finding. We have a partnership with the University of La Rioja in northern Spain, and that's one of the things that we're looking into is taking topography maps with NASA, and we're superimposing what's happening in the movements of growing conditions, and we're seeing that there is a major move forward to the northern parts of the world, and that's happening not just in Europe, but here in the United States. We're seeing many wineries and vineyards that were more toward the southern part of California moving north, and you'll see a greater proportion of those moving into Oregon and Washington, even some even into British Columbia.
You know, it's interesting that you mentioned Spain, because in that area, Bodegas Torres, one of the country's actually biggest wine producer, already is doing that. It's abandoning some of its seaside vineyards and moving up into the mountains. And people are worried about this, I guess, because it may create a demand for cutting down forests in order to replant grapevines and that sort of thing.
Well, that's a good point, Fred, because it's not just the wine industry and winemakers that are concerned about this kind of situation and they're taking these actions. The same is true in the coffee industry. They have the same problem with cacao production. So it is something that's going to be a big concern for all of us moving forward.
You know, I guess it's not all bad news. I've read that England today has more than 400 wineries, which is a huge jump from 20 years ago. And there's one French grower that I came across who gave up his vineyard in the Loire Valley in the cool area of France that's getting warmer and planted a new one in England.
Well, you know, that's an interesting point because we're going to find wine coming from places we never even thought of before.
Who would drink wine from England, right?
To go along with English food.
The comedian Peter Ustinov once said, "I imagine hell like this, Italian punctuality, German humor, and English wine."
Well, they're going to have to change that, I guess, huh, Fred?
Well, it probably goes well with English food, though, don't you think, Linda?
I don't want to get into big time trouble here, but I have to tell you, there's some good food in England, okay?
I know. I'm just trying to get your goat.
Oh, what a surprise.
Well, then I also hear that FIU is doing some groundbreaking research into a cancer-causing toxin called, I'm not sure how to pronounce it, ochratoxin, that's sometimes found in wine. It's not regulated in the U.S. right now. I had not heard about this. Dean, can you tell us more about that?
Fred, it's an important research project. In fact, the USDA has a $5 million grant that's out that includes University of California, Davis, and FIU to study the effects of global warming on wine production. And something that they found is that in winemaking, as the grapes grow on the wine, on the vines, the propensity for mold to grow inside the grape clusters, it increases with global warming. And that mold, if it gets into the juice whenever they're making the wine, can cause these toxins. And we're looking at developing a yeast that will mitigate those toxins, which could cause cancer.
How prevalent is that? Is that that toxin all over the place?
It is around the world. It's a big issue.
Before we go any further, I want to have everybody realize that they're not going to get cancer from drinking wine.
No.
Or are you saying they are?
No. There are incidences from the ochratoxin if it happens to be in the wine. And so that's what we want to do.
You're saying it is in the wine. That's what you're saying.
It can be. It can be.
I mean, How do we know if it is or it isn't? We don't.
That's a good question. Yeah, we don't.
You're
just going to kill the wine industry right now.
Go ahead.
There we go, yeah. No, well, what we're doing is being proactive because if global warming increases and the chances for ochratoxin being in wine increases, we want to be able to take the first steps to make sure that it doesn't happen. So that's what we're doing.
I understand that Europe is ahead of us on this. Have they found some ways to combat it, or do you have any leads?
Well, there's a lot of controversy and a lot of discussion about this. In Europe, they use old world winemaking technologies and methods. What we have in the United States tends to be much more advanced. So our sanitation and reduction of molds and bacteria in the winemaking process is much more sophisticated. So the likelihood that they're in American wines is probably less than what you might experience in other locations.
Is this detectable? Can you filter it out or something?
Well, we're expecting that the yeast are going to eat it and get rid of it before it ever becomes an issue.
Oh, interesting.
So, shall we have a glass of wine now or what?
Can't give up wine.
You know, I'm thinking it's interesting because mold is so helpful. Certain types of mold are beneficial.
Right.
Penicillin.
Well, penicillin
sure.
is
right.
mold, sure.
So, but this is toxic mold.
It could be. That's right.
It could be.
It
okay.
could be, yeah.
What?
So that's why we're doing the research on it, is to determine how prevalent is it and what can we do to mitigate it.
And you're believing that a certain kind of yeast can eat it up and take care of it?
Absolutely. We think that we can develop a unique strain that will be able to deal with it.
That's good news.
All right.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, okay, Fred, so you'll still drink, I'm sure.
I don't have to put down the glass of wine I have in my left.
Exactly. Well, Dean Hampton, much of the important innovation that you're doing that has been financed by the South Beach Wine and Food Festival enables you to do all of this research.
Absolutely. We're very, very fortunate to have had such a long relationship with Southern Wine and Spirits and with the Chaplin family. And we are so much in gratitude to Lee Schrager for his conceptualization of South Beach and what he's done there.
Right. It's just one question. How do you get a ticket?
You know, if you can figure that out, would you let me know also?
Okay, all right, I will.
Right. Well, in addition to that, the students there help with the demonstrations, and it's a two-way street because then they get to interact with what the events and what's happening. So a lot happens there with it. Well, it's been really fascinating, Dean Hampton. Very interesting week. Mike Hampton, thank you so much for joining us.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
And congratulations on the continued expansion and the success of the Chaplin School. And it's the Chaplin School of Hospitality and Tourism Management. Did I get it straight that way?
Absolutely.
Yes? Okay.
You're
at FIU. It's a busy week for you and for the FIU students participating in the festival. Fred Tasker, great advice or questions this time, as always.
Always a pleasure.
Great. Stay warm up there in Michigan.
Oh, we will. It's almost 40 degrees here today.
Oh, summer there.
A heat wave.
Right. Mm-hmm. Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman, great to be with you.
Always a pleasure, as Fred says.
Well, next week we'll be talking with Dr. Stephen Masley about new information to help prevent and treat heart disease. I'm Linda Gassenheimer. Join me then.